Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go! Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. I'm your host, James Mackey. Very excited to have Steve Gage with us today. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, James.
Absolutely. I'm really pumped. I'm excited. We're covering some new topics today that we have not discussed before on the show, actually, which is really cool. Before we jump into our topics, could you please tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. Well, I am a technologist at heart, I suppose. I was a data communications engineer going back into the 90s. I used to look after global data center communications. So fast forward, I'm in the US now. A company bought a small part of ESPN, bought and sold that a little bit. And I ended up being CIO of a large staffing company. It was more blue collar, but we had hundreds of offices. And so that was my first insight into staffing. That company was bought out by TrueBlue, actually. And the former CEO, myself, kind of put our heads together and thought, what should we do next? And we said, let's solve this problem that we had at the staffing company, which was, how to work with, B2B, how to work with secondary suppliers, and what are the complexities, and can we solve that complexity? Because we experienced that. So we did that, and where we sit today is my platform basically takes all the Wild West away from working with secondary vendors. So today I've worked, we've got thousands of staffing companies and staffing firms within our system. So I've got a good kind of lens into how that industry operates and hiring and everything that goes with it.
Yeah. And I think what's going to be very impactful is talking about, our first topic, how to leverage agencies properly, engaging when you're engaging with whether it's a staffing agency for contract work requirement, staff augmentation, or you're looking for, I can shed some light into permanent placement, success fee based agencies, embedded recruiting, contract recruiting, RPO. So, well, Steve, you're going through your insight. I'll also drive parallels into different engagement types as well. And we'll, I think, provide a pretty holistic view for folks on what they need to do to leverage agencies properly. To get us started, how do you think about companies engaging with staffing agencies? Like, what do you think are like the highest leverage things that leaders can do to properly engage with staffing firms?
Yeah, I mean, there's 10, 20 different things that you can look out for. I think it's three or four that are critical that I'll kind of hit throughout the process. But the first one for me is you have to understand your requirement. And you have to, what I mean by that is, and it sounds simple, but you have to know the exact job roles that you need. You have to have great job descriptions. What are the exact skills that you need, qualifications, experience? So really digging down and spending the time up front to know what the requirements are saves so much headache as you go down the process there.
Yeah, I think so in application, where I see a lot of executive leaders, the frustration kind of funnels up in terms of, okay, we're not getting what we need from our providers. There's a lot that should be done on the front end of opening a requisition with a staffing agency that I think is typically skimmed over. There should be a multi-step process to have a rec approved to be sent out to a staffing agency. I mean, opened in general, right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. That's what we like to see, because it's robust then and it's clear and it's concise of what we're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, like there's just a lot where it's kind of flying by the seat of your pants, so to speak. Like, getting all the salary requirements, the role description, even for a staff augmentation position, there should be an onboarding plan. Maybe it's accelerated. Maybe roles are more limited in scope. That's something that I think needs to be considered if somebody's going to be on a shorter term project. I don't know if they should necessarily have the breadth of responsibilities as a full time person that's going to be staying a year and a half, 2 years. So I think like getting really dialed in onto like the outcomes that need to be achieved if a full-time role needs to acquire like 3 outcomes to 5 outcomes, maybe the person sitting in the contract role should be accountable for 1 to 2. Really, right. Really be dialed in, accelerating ramp, understanding salary, and really just, I think just getting like more dialed in and having, again, a multi-step approval process that funnels up to somebody ideally at minimum senior director, but a VP level, depending on the size of the organization, right. Prior to having these kind of recs open where it's like loose, like, oh, we need a software engineer to kind of, to work on this project. It has to be a lot more dialed in than that.
Yeah, and it can be changed as well. I mean, it is, we often see, so, you know, you put a requirement out there and the candidates flowing back in are not quite right. And that's often down to the original requirement. So changing that and tweaking it and massaging that throughout the process, you know, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Right. And so, how do you think about industry-specific agencies? Like, how important do you feel like that is for them to have, like, a lot of industry experience?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, we look at the staffing agencies we've got out there. I think in the US now we're at 22,000 staffing firms that are out there that, you know, that you can deal with. So, you know, obviously depending on the criteria of that position, you know, whether it's a life science or, you know, healthcare or project management, these staffing companies, some of them are very niche and specialize in that. So I think spending the time about what are the kind of positions that this agency is filling, are they in the right sector for me or for the majority of my roles? If there's multiple roles, multiple agencies, that's also fine as well. And then spending the time to research these agencies, because people talk about it all the time, you know, from referrals, Glassdoor, you know, staffing firms have a reputation, and the ones that shout about their success rate. So really digging into the pedigree really of the staffing firm, I think is very, very important.
I mean, I think like there's a few things here. One, I think it's under one of the most important when you're selecting a staffing agency is understanding if they're working on high volume roles or like corporate roles, right? I mean, yeah. Like what's when they're like, and basically the structure of the process, like, do you need 1 or 2 interview rounds or do you need 5? Right. Yeah. Like what are the complexity of the roles? Are these like more blue collar or corporate positions? And understanding like the volume, is it really high volume, lower kind of more entry level, blue collar type of roles? Yeah. Or is it more strategic searches or higher level potentially searches when it comes to software engineers and these types of things? So I think qualifying those two, honestly, sometimes I feel like can be more important than industry experience. Just understanding like from a process perspective, how well does it align?
Yeah, I was going to say the complexity of that workflow as well. Like you just mentioned there, this could be, you know, from, you know, blue collar, light industrial, where we might not be even looking for a resume, right down to the extreme where we're doing skills testing and there's various levels of interviews and approval processes to go through. So the staffing agency has to be able to cater for that because it's not one fits every all box, you know. Yeah. It's diverse and it's very, very random often about what each position needs. So yeah, flexibility. Yeah. at the agency level is key.
Right. And I think too, it's like, you know, the other thing that I would say is really important is I don't know if it's enough to research the results that a staffing agency has generated, because you're going to find people who love a certain agency. You're going to find people who hate that agency. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know if it's the agency's fault or if it's the end customer's fault because they don't have an efficient hiring and onboarding process, or they have leaders that don't know what they're doing and they're looking for essentially staffing agencies to take responsibility for deliverables that are really the responsibility of the department lead. You know, or maybe there's high turnover at the staffing agency and that's mm-hmm. impacting quality. So like sometimes it's going to be the staffing firm's fault. Sometimes it's the end clients, but anyways, I feel like with a lot of staffing agencies, you're going to get kind of these mixed bag reviews. So mm-hmm. one of the things that I recommend is you ask to meet the people who are going to be on your project.
Yeah.
Like you want to actually evaluate, and staffing agencies hate when you do this, by the way. Yeah. But the reality is like, you want to know who's going to work on the team. Who's my delivery lead, right?
Yeah.
Like who's overseeing performance, right? And then who are going to be the recruiters, account managers, whatever, that are going to be dedicated to the account. you can also ask for assurance that those folks are going to stay on your project. Yeah. Now, they're going to start to push back on stuff like that, but you actually can have that stuff put in the SOW, mm-hmm. your statement of work. And I highly recommend that. It shouldn't just be based on like submittals or like some kind of activity metric. The two things you can look for, or you should be pushing for as a company, is number of hires or number of conversions. And then you also want to look at conversion rate. You know, how many resumes that are being sent are being actually interviewed by the hiring manager. And then also the conversion rate, that's actually even more helpful than one more helpful than that is going a step further and saying, of the candidates the hiring manager interviews on the first round, how, what percentage of those move forward to the next step? So you can put in a metric saying, okay, 50% of the resumes that are submitted to us have to make it to a hiring manager interview.
Yeah.
When you're evaluating agencies, like you want to be looking about like, what are they willing to commit? And also again, like knowing who the team is that's going to be working with you and actually putting that in the statement of work, that those folks are not going to be pulled into different accounts. I think that's really important.
Yeah, you're trusting them. They're, you know, your listeners here, they're looking for people. They're trusting their brand with an outside agency. So you want them, this outside agency, to care and love the recruitment process as much as what you do if you were doing it in-house as well. It's all about, you know, sharing your vision is paramount.
Right. Right. And I like, just for everybody tuning in, like I own a recruiting solutions firm. So, and we do like contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO. But I also, prior to starting my company, I did contingent search. I did staffing. I started at Kforce, which is a publicly traded staffing agency. I worked my way up from as an intern. So like I've been in those roles. I've also been in-house, run internal talent acquisition departments. I've been in the buyer's seat of these different talent solutions. And what I can tell you is that you quite honestly, as a buyer, you have a lot of leverage here because there are so many staffing agencies out there. You have a lot of leverage to create an SOW that works for your company. And again, it's not just about requirements. It's about the people that are actually working on your project. The other, like just to pivot to like the one other thing I would just say is like part of planning to open a role, like you should have a faster interview process for a contract position as through a staffing agency than you have for a full-time role. And so I think a lot of people confuse that by saying like, well, we need to make sure the person's really good. Of course you do. But again, the role should be more limited in scope. So what you're evaluating should be less, right? Again, if a full-time role has 3 to 5 outcomes, the outcome that needs to be delivered by the contractor should be like 1 to 2. And so that's how you accelerate the process by making sure that you still have quality control in place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's giving the agency a little bit of flexibility there as well to be able to move around. And like you say, for contingent type working as well, you know, if it doesn't work out right, it's a lot easier to fix than if it's a perm placement there, you know, if it's something permanent. So by not really reducing the requirements, but just lightening them up a little bit and then creating some flexibility in there.
Right.
We should.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's like, again, where companies get this wrong. And also, I feel like staffing agencies position it wrong. It's like when we say lighten up requirements, like we mean like shortening the scope of the role. It doesn't mean saying like lowering the bar on all the skill sets that are required. It just means like if you get a candidate, like this is what, you know, staffing agencies hate to hear. It's like they have all of this stuff, but they're missing this like one tech, right? Yeah. And it's like, we can't fill this role because this like one thing. It's like, okay, well, if that's mandatory, fine, but then cut some of the other things, make this like the role more limited in scope. And if that's not available on a contract basis, well, it sounds like that skill set is valuable enough that you need that on a permanent basis.
Yeah.
Right? So should it even be a contracted role?
Yeah. And flipping it to the candidate side as well, these candidates, if they're missing, you know, 1 out of 15 skills, you know, let's say we're talking about, you know, some sort of development here. By missing one, these candidates like the opportunity to tap into another skill, you know, something new that they've not quite done, because it's highly likely that they're going to be in an environment where there's 5 other of those guys there and they're gaining more experience that gives them more self, advancement really in it. So we're not lowering the bar. It's just these people generally will get into a situation and be able to evolve and get that skill and get it, you know, that skill, you know, absolutely quickly.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I like one thing I wanted to touch on too is like we're I feel like I keep coming back to statements of work, which I feel like are very important when you're engaging with a staffing agency. So like once you've established who's going to be working on the account, outlining that those are the folks that need to be engaged. And remember too, like when you're talking to a VP, usually they're incredibly sales bent. So you need to be aware of that. They're incredibly skilled at objection handling.
Yeah.
So you really have to dive into what are the quality of the recruiters that are on the account? What background and experience do they have? Are they kids out of college? Do they have 10 years of experience?
Yes.
Right. So you have like a lot of these, and for high volume recruiting, a kid out of college is fine. For strategic finance and accounting, engineering roles, it just depends on what you need. So you want to understand the breakdown of the team. But on the SOW, this is what's most favorable for the staffing agency from requirement level. Well, the most favorable is no SOW, like just butt in the seat is the most favorable. The layer underneath that is activity metrics, right? So it's like the number of messages sent, followed by the number of screening calls, right? So you have those, then you have like submittals, and then further down funnel, you have conversion rates, right? And then further down funnel, you have number of hires. What's most favorable for the company is number of hires. What's most favorable for the staffing agency is nothing or high level activity metrics, because then they just know the activity funnel and they can make sure they hit that metric. So that's why you see a lot of statements of work sort of meet in the middle to submittals, which has its challenges. Like they have one submittal, but they need to make two a week. So they push someone through who's not a great fit, and then it messes with their conversion rate from person sent to who's actually interviewed. But it's like, it's finding that middle ground sometimes that works for everybody.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say that, because every job is different, but, you know, if we're finding Java developers or project managers, there's quite a lot of those people out there. So, you know, the top of the funnel is going to flow down quite, you know, accurately. But if somebody's looking for the purple squirrel out there and it's hard to find, you know, that can easily screw around with metrics. So I think having kind of macro statement, you know, macro directions in the statement of work depending on the roles as well, which sounds super complex.
That's
but
smart.
It makes it successful, because everybody wants to succeed, you know, on both sides of this deal. And there's also often I see things missing. What if so people have been placed in the statement of work should be things like, well, what if it doesn't work out? What does the replacement process look like? What does the refund process look like? You know, if something doesn't quite go right, you know, guy gets a job and 5 days in, he's not really the right fit there. What is the staffing agency going to do about that?
Yeah, I think so. There's two follow up points on that. Like one, when something goes wrong, internal leaders need to understand it's like pretty close to 50-50. It could be the internal team versus the agency. I think the issue that you have to remember is that an internal hiring manager is probably not going to take responsibility for something going wrong. They're going to push it on the staffing agency. So it's like the feedback that as a leader, you're going to receive is that like 90% of the time it's the agency's fault. But the reality is that it's honestly usually like 50-50. It might be the agency's fault. A lot of the times the responsibility was on an internal team to deliver an outcome. So at the end of the day, hiring managers, your internal leaders are accountable for the outcomes delivered. It doesn't matter if it's outcomes that their internal team needs to provide or that their agency needs to provide. So it's really important to remember that. So if something's going wrong with an agency, okay, fine, it's going wrong with the agency. Let's even accept that. But at the end of the day, it's responsibility of that internal leader to drive outcomes for their department. So I feel like that's also really important to qualify, because I think I've certainly been in situations where and now our business model is different. Like we don't do staff log, we don't do success fee based. We're so embedded and we work so closely with our customers that this unalignment doesn't really happen in this business model for us. But when I was working on the contingent and staffing side, there were definitely several instances where something was completely out of our control. But from the perception of the customer, it was our fault. And it's like, well, look, you're keeping us at arm's length, limiting us to top of funnel. If all I can do is submit resumes, how are you going to hold me accountable for offer acceptance rate? I have nothing to do with that part of the process. Like,
Yeah, you've got to extend that because they are the delivery arm. So this agency, you have to provide them with as much information as you can, maybe some internal blogs. What is your company culture? What's your selling proposition? And let them, you know, kind of onboard the vendor as if you do an employee, you know, share what's your company culture like? What are the expectations within the role? What does the hierarchy look like within there? The more you give the agency and the more, like you say, close communication that you have there is important. And then you also touched on feedback, you know, on how things are going. What I like to see is I like feedback on the things that didn't go right. So, you know, we're top of funnel, we get 10 resumes and 3 go to interview. Why did these 7 get, you know, submitted? Why did they not, you know, carry on the process? And let's talk about those 7 because we don't want to leave those in a black hole either, you know, because everyone in this process wants to understand why, because the agency or the recruiter at the agency that's working this position, they don't want to be wasting their time. And maybe they're not clear on some things. And, you know, why have we got 7 rejections? So having a lens into that as well, on the, not the failures, because the job will get filled eventually, but it might optimize the way that job is being filled.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm just trying to think of those other parallels. Okay, so we talked about staffing for contingent-based firms or for embedded recruiting. I think the other thing you have to remember is recruiters at staffing agencies, contingent-based success fee firms for perm placement, they're working with several customers at once, right? So in some cases, they're working with a lot. So, and there's different structures. Like if they're a niche provider, let's just say they provide software engineers, then what they're going to do is if they're location-based is they're going to try to take one software engineer and introduce them to 10 companies. So it increases the likelihood that that candidate's going to be placed. So you have to remember, like if they're working with 10 different customers, first off, how much are they going to really have the ability to remember about your organization? And how much time are they actually spending with you? If they have 10 customers, that's 4 hours per week thinking about your company. So I'm not saying that like sometimes it's lower volume, but I would say on average, like when I was in staffing, I was working with a lot of customers at once. And so what ends up happening is like when they're doing the kickoff call with you, they're asking questions about like, what's the hiring manager like? What are they looking for? What's the culture like? What are you guys building? And a great recruiter is going to ask the right questions. But what you need to do is you don't necessarily know at the beginning of the engagement, are you getting a great recruiter? Are you getting a mediocre recruiter? Mm-hmm. And the way that you shorten the delta to make sure that you can get the best results possible, provide them with the details in writing. This is how you position our company. Like just have like, okay, this is how you position the company. This is how you position the role. This is how you position the hiring manager. This is our culture. These are, you know, the whatever, if it's temp to hire, like this is what will happen upon conversion, success path, progression, all that kind of stuff. So that it should be a one pager. So the recruiter has all that information and you should be sharing that with your vendors. So because otherwise they're going to give like a 2-sentence pitch that may or may not actually be that accurate.
Yeah. And let's be honest, right? That recruiters work fast and they want the easiest, lowest hanging fruit that they can get to. So the more material that they've got is like as a company, make that recruiter, as a hiring manager, make that recruiter as successful as he possibly can be. Make it as easy. So when he switches his computer on in the morning, he's going to go to, you know, Steve Gage Corporation and work my job because it's probably going to be the easiest one to fill because I've got more information. So you're kind of always in competition with, like you say, the other 9 companies that recruiter is working for. So make it as easy as possible.
You know, and like, look, I think there might be some agencies tuning in like, wow, man, like you're really, you know, you're talking to us in a way that like, maybe like, it seems like we're sometimes not, you know, it's like, we're not doing great. And like, that's not the case. I think the best agency people tuning in, it might be that are hearing this, like, if you are in the agency side, and you're hearing this, this is all stuff that like, you actually want to share with a customer. Like if you want to develop trust with a customer, and this is, you know, for CPOs tuning in too, in house, like, the right vendors are going to help you be aware of your blind spots. And it's a mutually beneficial thing to have alignment on what good performance looks like. The best agencies are going to do that. And if a company like I, you know, the way that I've built trust, honestly, with several customers, is I've just said, like, look, like if you need help, like if you choose not to do embedded recruiting and you decide to go contingent or the staffing firm, I can help you negotiate the terms.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that you're protected. And hey, by the way, as you're evaluating us, as you're evaluating other companies, this is what you should be looking for. And if you can provide that level of expertise where you're showing that you're not just being incredibly biased toward your own success, like I'm not saying negotiate against yourself. What I'm saying is bringing clarity to what good performance looks like. And if you can show them what good performance looks like and help them come to that conclusion, you are building trust and confidence and their belief that you can deliver, which is critical. So that's why you want to be pushing this stuff as an agency as well.
Yeah, if you're incorporating that agency into your work life with the hiring manager, I mean, it's all about relationships as well. And recruiters are experts. I mean, they know better probably what the hiring manager needs as well. So it's not just about, okay, here's the job requirements, go fill out the, you know, go grab resumes and get me some interviews. You know, these people can be lent on a little bit for advice as well. Hey, I've set this job up. Is it right? Like accept some, not criticism, but accept good advice from the experts, which are the recruiters out there. It's so important.
Right. And again, it's like, it's that's why you see a lot of recruiters try to limit scope, right? Like, and there's a balancing act. Like as an internal leader, you have to know what a role needs versus what maybe it doesn't. And a recruiter shouldn't be dictating that, but you should be taking that feedback and saying, okay, this seems to be what's choking our top of funnel. What are we going to do about that? And then you need to make a decision and share that with the recruiter. But if you have a role that's open for several months, like it's like the recruiters want to make the money. You know, they want to fill it as fast as possible. So you got to like, it's, and honestly, like it's, you know, on the staffing side, particularly the quotas are so freaking intense. Like I remember when I was at K-Force, like, you know, it was, the quotas were really, really tough. It was a grind. It wasn't a work-life balance. It was, you know, pumping out calls, like really moving at a fast clip. I actually started on the sales side. My target was I had to do 100 cold calls a day plus 3 in-person meetings a day.
Wow. Wow.
And so it was, and I was on the finance and accounting side when I started out. So like, you know, if somebody's been at a staffing agency for more than 6 months, you know, if they have, particularly if they have over a year of experience, if they've been at an agency for 1 to 3 years, like this person's a hustler.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You don't have to worry about like somebody's not grinding it out. That the one thing I would say is like, if you're starting to feel like there's a lack of engagement, it can be because they're like, their time can be better spent. Like, hey, I'm not going to work on this customer because they have these unrealistic expectations on compensation or roles. So, you know, that's a conversation that, you know, you can also have transparently with an agency, like, hey, like how high are we on the priority list? Like, let's just level set, you know, based on the requirements we've given you, how does this stack up with what else is on your plate?
Yeah.
And let's have a real conversation about that. I want to make sure that we're the first thing you think about when you get to your desk in the morning. And I, you know, I remember I took, I billed myself out as a chief people officer for a person SaaS company. I did this during COVID and I wanted to take myself off overhead because things plummeted in hiring.
I'm sure.
I had to do what I had to do to keep the lights on. And that was basically a conversation where I had staffing agents. Like my sell to them was like, look, we're going to have a weekly meeting. I was selling them and working on our company. Like, this is how many placements I want you to make this month. This is how much money you're going to make, right? You know, what do you need to get from me in order to, that you can be successful?
Yeah.
Like I want to be your priority. I want you to wake up every day and work on my roles. What do we have to do to make that happen?
That's music to their ears, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, let's make some money together. Let's get you paid. Let's get us what we need. Mm-hmm. Let's get it done. I don't think enough internal leaders have those genuine conversations with their agency partners. I don't.
Yeah. We don't see it. So it's, I guess the lesson here is, you know, the more you can share, the more you can make them be, you know, I always use the term delivery arm, but really they're part of your company. It's the communication is everything. Feedback is everything.
Yeah. And I think like one thing we can get into, like, I think we've already touched on a lot of like measuring performance and whatnot. But I would like to just like talk about cost per hire a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's one of the things that you had written down. Like, what are your thoughts on cost per hire sustainability when it comes to partnering with agencies?
Yes. I mean, everything can be measured. It's how much am I paying this agency to get this candidate in there, there's an expense there. And how do you measure that up against if I was doing that internally with an internal person there? So looking at this, it's difficult to quantify at all levels because some positions are really quite easy. And some positions are extremely difficult as well. So if you can kind of segment what the category of that position is, then you can kind of manage the cost, per hire. So, I mean, in my world, we're not doing direct hire. So we're looking at, a position comes in, even from the agency to go out to secondary suppliers. We know at a certain point, so cost per hire for me means sometimes a little bit different of what it would for, let's say, a CPO at a large firm. Cost per hire could be what's the burden for having this employee on my W-2 versus the burden to paying a higher contract price with no burden, at a contract, B2B level as well. So it's right. Just understanding that. And it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's your cost per hire is something that you have to look at and make sure that you're hiring at a sustainable rate. And I think there's parallels from revenue organizations to talent organizations when you're looking at your, on the revenue side, you would call it customer acquisition cost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so here it's like employee acquisition cost. And one of the most important ratios on, for instance, for us in tech specifically, is looking at the ratio between customer acquisition cost and lifetime value.
Yeah, right,
which is basically the amount of money you're going to make back.
When do we get paid back, right? Yeah, exactly.
Right, your payback period and how the overall contract length and how much money you're ultimately going to collect.
Yeah.
And what ratio that you need to, when you're thinking about the cost of delivering the solution and everything else, where you need to be at in order to how much money that you're going to be making back from the customer. So I think that that's an important thing. The other thing I would just mention there is different engagement models are going to work based on your requirements. Like, there are going to be some cases if you're leveraging contingent success fee firms too much, where that's going to ultimately become a huge expense on a P&L and something that can be seen unsustainable at a high volume level. And so I would just say, like, be strategic about working with contingent firms, understand the quality of the recruiter that you're working with on the contingent firm. I personally, this is why I went from, when I started the company, I did contingent. I moved to contract and embedded recruiting, RPO, because I think it's a more sustainable solution if you're going to have ongoing needs and you want flexibility to your P&L. So the ratio that I see often for later stage organizations is 70% in-house, 30% augmented to agency. So you have a flexible cost kind of baked into that can fluctuate alongside the fluctuation of hiring and still hire at a sustainable rate where you're bringing your cost per hire a lot further down on the agency side than working with contingent firms. So there's different like ways you can slice and dice it, but that's where it's like you have to think about, okay, is this a staff aug motion? Is this a embedded recruiting RPO motion? Do we need a success fee based provider, or do we need some kind of hybrid between embedded and success fee, which you can also find, it's basically partially subscription, partially success-based. So there's a lot of different ways to slice and dice it, but we have to think critically about what type of provider we need to plug in based on our hiring needs.
Yeah, and two thoughts on that. One is the current climate, and where we are in the economy right now. But first, we're seeing some kind of skewed numbers a little bit at the minute because the lifetime payback of, we've hired somebody and they're in a role. And obviously, we've got the perfect person, so the longer we can keep them. What we're seeing is that people are not starting new projects at the minute. So obviously, new open requisitions are down. But what we are seeing, which is skewing like my cost predictions, is that these hiring managers are keeping the existing people on and just moving to another project. Because if they lose that candidate, then there's no budget to get another one, but there is budget to carry on that. So we're seeing that changing a little bit. So that's easing up. on, you know, the actual, you know, cost of acquisition there, or CAC, you know, the same thing, employee acquisition. And then the second thought is, we're also at a time now where, you know, economy is kind of hurting, in especially in the, you know, the tech industry. And, you know, maybe the internal talent recruiters are being let go, maybe sales teams are let go. But if you keep that relationship with the agency, that's highly recommended, because when things are going to change, and when, you know, the switch flips in a few months, hopefully, where, you know, everything comes back to life, then to lean on that agency, they're ready to go a lot faster than what you could be. So even if you're not opening jobs, keep the relationship with the agency.
Right. And this is why it's so important to go ahead and get MSAs in place.
Yeah.
So if you're an internal leader of people, I don't care if you're a CEO, CPO, director of talent acquisition, this is the time for you to get MSAs in place. If you have to go through procurement, that's going to take time. Mm-hmm. You need to get MSAs in place, outlining the terms, outlining performance in a statement of work. That doesn't mean that you have open rec with them, but you should be evaluating the quality of the teams. Like, again, yeah. I want to know, if I'm going to work with an agency, I'm going to know who's working on my account.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to interview them. I'm going to make sure that they're good. I need to make sure, because that's going to be the primary indicator of success. Is, you know, there were, you know, you're, when you're working with an agency, everybody's focused on the candidates. So what are the candidates? Oh, right. But who's bringing you the candidates? Like, one of your contractors is the recruiter. You need to make sure that you have the right recruiter, and you want to do that stuff proactively. So you should have those MSAs in place, and then you can send additional statements of work amendments to the MSA to actually go ahead and have people billing. And you can negotiate, you can either lock in pricing in an MSA, or you can negotiate pricing on a per kind of like statement of work basis as roles open up. So there's different ways to structure that. But like, you're absolutely right. Like, keep the recruiters warm. Make sure that you have the agreements in place, so it doesn't slow you down when you need to start to hire.
Yeah, it is sound advice, because we all know first to the table wins in this kind of scenario.
Right. You're going to need it. And you don't want to be in a position where, I was actually talking with a late stage global head of talent acquisition the other week, where we're doing exactly this. We're going ahead and working with procurement, getting an MSA in place. They're not going to need to leverage us probably till September or October, but we're getting this in place now because they honestly, like, they cut a lot of their internal talent acquisition team.
Yeah.
So their global head of TA is like, look, like, if we get more on our plate, like, we're not able to deliver on this in-house. Like, so that's why we don't have the budget to hire somebody right now on my team. Mm-hmm. But so we're not in a position where we have the budget, but if we have to start hiring, I'm not going to have, you know, time. I need resources that I can plug in on demand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so that's like, those are some of the conversations that I'm having. And I think some of the companies that are a little bit more sophisticated with their talent acquisition systems, like, this is what they're doing. They're making sure that they have a bench of strong on-demand recruiters. And particularly with the uncertainty in the market, the volatility in tech, this is where it really makes sense to have flexible, like, on-demand agency support, probably more now than even like a few years ago, or like that massive bull market we saw, right, from like 2010 to 2019, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, hey, I want to transition. I really want to learn more about what your company does. I think it's a unique service offering. I want to talk about how you're partnering with agencies, staffing agencies as your customers, what you're providing. I mean, could you just, like, before we dive into more of the complexities specifics, could you just high level tell us about, like, what you're solving for these staffing agencies?
Sure. Yeah. So I mean, it started out, it's staggering, really, how many of the large staffing firms out there are still using processes that are inefficient. So, you know, meaning, so we sit in the middle of, you know, you use Kforce as an example. They're a customer of mine as well. They get requirements in. They can't fill all the positions all with all their recruiters. So they basically essentially sub out that job to other staffing firms, you know, throughout the nation. And that's always been done very insystematically. There's emails and spreadsheets and hot lists and things going all over the place. So it's a way that we do deep integrations into their applicant tracking system. So requisition flow, candidate flow, status flow kind of, you know, synchronously goes between two systems, and it's all in one place. And what really we're trying to solve, people working outside of a system, because if they've not got tools to be able to do that, all of a sudden these resumes start ending up staying in the email and don't end up in the ATS. So we drive everything that we do through data metrics. Every company does, right? They're looking at the numbers, and if things are not within that system, then it's not working. So we just find it a nice simple way to be able to distribute jobs resumes back in. That's the first part of it.
Follow question there. So when you're saying, like, basically you help staffing firms manage their relationships, working with third party vendors, who are the third party vendors exactly? What are examples of the vendors?
Or the staffing firms. So generally, we use KFOS as an example. They've got access to American Airlines and Wells Fargo and, all these huge companies out there that will not work with generally the smaller staffing companies. You know, if you're not on their MSP list or if you're not on their distribution list, you're not a trusted one. So by going and working through some of the larger staffing agencies, the vendors are other staffing firms, but often a lot smaller. Sometimes they're competitors and they share jobs between each, but generally it's a little bit of a smaller one that gets access to those positions, really, and gives them a chance to be able to fill those.
All right, great. And so, like, just saying, going into more detail, like, how do you build the trust, like a trust relationship between a staffing firm and the vendor?
Yeah, so the vendors, so we flip it on its head. Yes, we love our clients and everything, but for us it's a lot about the vendor community. We try and make it easy for them, because often some companies don't or can't work with secondary suppliers. We typically see about 20 to 30% of requisitions are able to go to secondary spend, because there's some companies out there that won't allow an extra level in there. So obviously, those requisitions stay with the staffing company, but for the others that are distributed, we see about 20, 30% spend go out. So we like to take care of the vendors, and we our model is, obviously we've got the technology to do all this, but it's the service and support that goes with it as well. Because it's a very hard thing that we're solving. People will often just not even want to try and work with another secondary supplier because it's of the complexities around it. So we build this nice, simple structure, and then the vendor community, we spend a lot of time with them. So for one, you can scale very quickly with a vendor community. If we need 100 submittals and 10 positions for this mobile up for American Airlines, well, we can go after that quite quickly. So it's all about nurturing, building trust, building the relationship. So, we don't really get in the middle of, that recruiter at the staffing firm with the secondary vendor. There's really strong bonded relationships that are built there. We're celebrating constantly, so we're always, there's awards and badges and accolades that we do monthly and annually, our training and on-demand. So we're always going after the vendors and really, talking to them and what do they want. And, my company, we have an advisory board, but we also have another advisory team, and it's dozens of staffing vendors, leaders of staffing vendors that are telling me what's going on in the world and what they're seeing and what they would like to see. And then we pass that back to the client as well and advise the client that, if you work this way, you're going to get more attention from the vendor community over here.
And that's interesting. So it sounds like you're doing the advisement as well. My next question was going to be surrounding, like, is this process, like, solely solved through technology, or is there kind of like this services advisory element to it as well?
Yeah, we've seen both sides. So and frankly, James, when we first started, one of our initial mistakes was that we relied and we thought pure technology only is going to work for this, and it didn't. And because there was, it was change control, and people didn't really understand it. We were kind of a pioneer really in the industry about doing this and solving this problem, and we knew it was going to be hard. So we thought, okay, we'll just give them the keys to the kingdom, switch it on, and we'll just, of course, they're going to use the system, and they didn't. So we started building the support teams that go around with it. So now we have relationship managers, customer success, customer support, that basically are talking to these people all the time. We go visit the vendors, kind of do seminars every now and then where we talk about what we're trying to do. So, and then I'll give you a prime example that we hear all the time. One of our clients will say, hey, we need 100 mobile developers like tomorrow. We need these filling. We're up against it against other staffing companies. So the people, the staffing companies that are with us, they've access to all these vendors there. So we will actively take this requirement and go on a war dial and get in touch with all the contacts, all the top quality vendors that we know, because we're measuring them all the time. We know who's good, and say, hot job, get this done. It'll be filled a lot easier than what some of the other positions are. So we focus the vendor community where focus is needed often.
I love it. And so my last question, we're coming up on time here. I wanted to talk a little bit about where you are today, what you're building. What are you working on right now? What's the focus of the company?
That's a good question. So we're around the staffing side of things. And we also have seen over the last few years that a very critical piece of this is removing a lot of the risk and compliance out of the relationship. So when we're onboarding the vendors, we now take a lot of care and a lot of time to be able to do that. So I'm looking at, is this a corporation? Is the COI, certificate of insurance, is it in date? Have they got diversity? Have they got the certificate with that? So we onboard them. We check in against the actual agencies for, is this a legit tax ID number? Is the address where they told it is? So that removes so much of the risk away from it before it even gets to the candidate level or the visa level, because the community knows that they've been watched and measured. They play really nicely now for us. So because we've taken so much time there. So we are now building a platform. We're quite advanced in this process to be able to put all this in one place. So a way to distribute documents, redline documents, sign off, and really create this B2B vendor platform, particularly for the staffing industry, where the client has got a lens into, I've got 1,000 vendors and 700 are in compliant and 100 this month, the COIs are going to go out of date. So my future vision is I want to become what Morningstar is in the investment world. I want to be that in the B2B vendor world. So where somebody can go to a vendor profile, see the latest news, what's the latest stock price, are they on a sanctioned list, are they filing their returns, so all of that in one place is a very desirable thing that our clients are jumping all over right now.
That's really cool. And this is solving quite a really important issue, because I think on the technology side, there's just so many inefficiencies with staffing agencies. It's so many processes are manual across the board, whether we're talking about vendor management systems, technology, or within the applicant tracking systems, or across the board. And there's so many opportunities to create more leverage if you can tweak and accelerate each part of the process. Like, I think one thing to think about too, it's like, I find it fascinating to think about, if you tweak each part of the process to make it 3% more efficient, but if you can do that 5 times throughout your entire process, you're going to have massive compounding efficiency gains. And that's what you have to think about. How can we leverage technology solutions that are going to help us at each phase of the process to be more productive, right?
Yeah, that's the hallelujah moment, right? It's because we as a company, we're an add-on. We're just a piece of the puzzle that goes together. And these days, partnerships is the way to go. You're not going to find a company that does everything. It's that you have to bolt on and add on all these different pieces together, and embracing that are the people that will win.
Right. I mean, and you're working with a lot of the biggest agencies. It's quite an impressive list.
Yeah, we are. We're in the top 100. Yeah, we focus on the larger companies, but we're going down there. But we've got some big names in there of the top 20.
You have some really big brands with you. So that's a great job. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, hey, Steve, this has been a lot of fun. We're coming up right on time. We went all the way through to the last minute. Thank you so much for coming on today and exploring again topic that we have not discussed in depth. There's just an incredible amount of value. If you're tuning in, I really hope that you take this episode, drop it in your Slack channel, share it with your recruiting team, share it with anybody who's evaluating staffing agencies. If you're on the staffing side, share it with your leaders or whomever would make a buying decision on this. I think it's incredibly important. And so, Steve, thank you for coming on today and sharing your wisdom on the topic. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. It was an absolute pleasure.
And for everybody tuning in, thank you for joining us. And I'm looking forward to talking to you next time. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2.
Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.